listening. You're listening. You're listening. You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What's this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It feels very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-help radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
One. 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up.
David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. So much has been happening over the last 24 hours. I don't know where to begin. The first thing I would say that as we're doing this interview with Pastor Mike McBride, verdict is coming out about the Sean Puffy Combs case. And he's been found guilty of 2 of the 5 charges. The racketeering and sex trafficking charges will not stick. Mm. I bring this up because obviously that is now dominating many people's social media feeds, and that is the topic du jour. That is the thing that is the headline. It's disturbing what we know about Diddy, but it's not lost on me that the guy that's in this White House has been accused of similar type of things. And when it's brought up, he sued outlets and has won for talking about things that he's been accused of, sexual harassment, sexual assault, rape, the whole nine. He's been associated with people, the Epsteins, for example, that have been connected to these type of nefarious things. And he's in power. And as we're talking about Diddy today, what we may be overlooking, it's the seriousness of how that power is being yielded. It's being yielded in the form of a draconian bill that is over 1,000 pages. He dubs it the Big Beautiful Bill. It is anything but. It will have far-reaching implications that will be with us for decades to come. There's an opportunity to maybe stop it, reverse it, lessen it, do some things, and I'm hoping that why we are in the middle of what people used to call the bread and circus type of atmosphere, what's happening with celebrities and overlooking what is going on in government, that we don't fall for it. Even if it's a few of us who don't fall for it, you know, I'd rather have a few people who are organized and focused than 100 people that are scattered around and kind of oblivious to some of the things that are happening. I scheduled this interview with Pastor Mike McBride the other day because he had put out a call for people to be 10 toes down, to put everything they had into stopping this bill, a bill that initially passed Congress by one vote and passed the Senate by one vote and now has to go back to Congress. So joining us is Pastor Mike McBride. Your thoughts on what is going on, especially with this current administration?
Well, it's great to be with you, David D. And I think what's going on right before our eyes, even as you referenced the Diddy outcome, is that people, particularly white folks with power, have a very different quality of life and way of wielding power than the rest of us. It puts on its head in a whole ugly way what Kendrick Lamar said, "They not like us." And I hope all of us can appreciate that this is class warfare at its highest conceivable level in our lifetime. This big billionaire looting bill, as I like to call it, the BBL bill, is a bill that literally will transfer $1 trillion of tax breaks to the richest people in our country. Someone said it is benefiting the top 1% and 2%. I told them, you're being too generous. It ain't even the top 2%. This is the top 1%. The wealthiest of the wealthiest of the wealthy are going to benefit from one of the largest tax breaks given in our lifetime. $925 million will be cut from SNAP and Medicaid. They're adding $75 billion to an already out of control and unaccountable ICE brigade. And so this bill is an assault on all that is decent, all that is righteous, all that is just. And we as the people have to continue to struggle for freedom, dignity, call it what it is, not lose hope and keep organizing. But if we have a day like today, 24 hours, to put pressure on our Congress members from all across the country to vote no on this bill, today is a day to fight, and we'll wake up tomorrow and fight another day.
A lot of attention has been given to the cuts that are going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And for many people, they're like, well, Medicaid doesn't apply to me. I'm not old enough for it. Or they, you know, that's their parents who got to deal with it. It's not something that is top of mind. The SNAP thing, you know, I've heard people say, well, we've been poor before, we'll be poor again. I don't know how, you know, how one can be that cavalier, but it is something that has been said. I'm concerned about the things that are hidden in it. For example, no state can regulate artificial intelligence for the next 10 years.
Well, they actually took that out.
They did take it out.
Out the Senate. Now, the House can try to sneak it back in, but we were able through advocacy to get that out of the bill, which is a victory that we ought to celebrate, but they can try to slip it back in, which is why we must stay vigilant. But absolutely, they try to sneak all kind of poison pills in there, and I'm sure we'll talk about a few more.
What were the other ones that were able to be stripped out? You know, because the thing about AI, which I use and, you know, I enjoy it as a tool, but can have far-reaching consequences if it's unregulated.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it was going to be used would just be to deep fake everybody. You know, we could have Pastor Mike McBride come on, you know, and go virtual, you know, or go viral and say that he's a MAGA guy and he believes in a big, beautiful bill, you know, because somebody with nefarious intent was able to do that. And so, yeah, that was a big fight. We were at Berkeley last week. They had a big conference on AI, and that was one of the points that came up. So I'm glad that was able to be stripped. The other thing that I was concerned about was a lot of the regulatory stuff that had been assigned to committees and judges and
yeah.
bodies have all been funneled in to the executive branch. What stood out for me was how elections could be yielded or voided or canceled and what have you. From your knowledge, were those stripped? Were those talked about? What else has been stripped from this bill?
I won't say that a lot has been stripped that I can name for a fact. I certainly know that piece around the AI was stripped. I think some of the pieces around limiting the judicial enforcement. I think one section restricts federal court's power to enforce contempt orders when no bond is posted. That was left in there. According to our best research, it doesn't give the president authority to cancel or delay elections. It doesn't allow the Supreme Court, it doesn't allow the president to ignore Supreme Court rulings, but it does certainly weaken job protections for new federal employees, and it limits the court's enforcement capabilities. Now, just on its face, I just think it's important for us to appreciate that 8% of the country, when polled several days ago, had no idea that these cuts to Medicare, these increases to ICE, and all of these things we just mentioned were even in the bill. I mean, there were so much misinformation, and to your point, pump fakes and misdirection, that only 8% of the country even knew that this bill was going to impact all those different kinds of things. And so when you start to peel this bill back, when you start to take a look at what's actually in there, it is a massive, massive payout to the billionaire class. It is a massive extension of funding to the federal law enforcement apparatus. And it is certainly a huge, significant slash to all of the safety net and public safety infrastructures that are related to food and healthcare. These are things that local governments and counties are going to have to replace, which means that it is now going to pressure test local government at a time when we are already stretched beyond our capacity. So it's a terrible, terrible bill. It's a terrible political vision. It is inhumane. It is not certainly in line with my values or the values of folks who love peace and justice. And we got to keep figuring out ways to defeat this stuff as it comes up, and then take care of one another as we wade through the next several years of this wilderness called the Trump administration part two.
The amount of money that's going to be given to ICE in enforcement, you talked about pump fake.
Yeah.
And I think there's some that's like, well, that don't apply to me. I'm a citizen, et cetera, et cetera. And that has nothing to do with us. We've done a number of shows, and we went through demographic by demographic, noting that here where we're at, the face of immigrant or migrant tend to be Latino. But when you go to other parts of the country, you'll find that the numbers are vastly different, in particular with Black migrants being, you know, caught up and swept up, you know, Haitians, Jamaicans, folks throughout the Caribbean, and of course our Asian brothers and sisters who are simultaneously being hit pretty hard. What is crazy about this denaturalization process in which he is coming along and saying these are lawbreakers, but when you're looking at how these folks became lawbreakers is basically saying, well, you know, Pastor Mike had a visa. I'm now revoking that visa. He's a lawbreaker. And that's a little bit different than saying Pastor Mike, quote unquote, snuck into the country. If you're talking about Asians and folks in the Caribbean, many of them were told to come here and got on planes, got off at an airport, and were the victims of U.S. policy in the form of war and death squads and things that we finance. Many of those folks are now being retroactively denationalized. With this amount of money going towards ICE, it seems like the plan is to ramp this up even more.
Yeah.
And can you speak to that? Because we have seen what over-policing looks like. that when you have cops throughout your community, they become an occupying force. And crime doesn't necessarily go down, but they're here. They become more of a containment apparatus than they are a crime-fighting unit. So, you know, we've had cops that over-police the hood all the time, but things still go on in the hood, and their job really is, you know, to quote the old Thin Blue Line, just don't let them come on our side of town. People seem comfortable with that, but now with ICE, how do you anticipate that being played out?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you said so much that just pains me, you know, and I've heard it similarly. Let me just start off by saying, according to our research, you can find a lot of this information on our Instagram pages for Live Free USA or the Black Church Pack or at livefreeusa.org. Our research tells us that $75 billion is included in this bill to beef up ICE. That will translate to 10,000 new ICE agents that will be hired over the next couple years. Why? Because there are many cities that fall within the jurisdiction of ICE, particularly and Border Patrol, 100 miles from the border, that are running up against some of the powerful organizing many of us are doing across the country to ensure that our local police departments do not coordinate and partner with ICE or the Border Patrol when they are carrying out these actions. Without that kind of cooperation, there is not enough federal ICE agents and Border Patrol agents to execute these raids. And so the lack of cooperation, wonderful outcome by lots of our organizers across the country, are now triggering an opportunity or a desire to ramp up more funding for federal ICE agents to do what they can't get done when they are not able to cooperate with local law enforcement. So it's a nod to our organizing, but it is a reaction then by the federal administration. $45 billion will go towards building more detention centers through 2029. Again, on the heels of opening up this alligator, the federal detention center thing down in Florida, where they literally have taken over some kind of resort, put alligators around the water, and are now about to house one of the largest facilities for undocumented and migrant individuals. It's a modern day concentration camp. It'll fund 1 million more deportations per year and $15 billion being spent on secret police, which I think is just another way of saying that they're going to create more law enforcement at the federal level that, again, are not accountable to the citizens of this country. Why is that problematic beyond just the direct impact of quote unquote immigration? You just mentioned it. Unfortunately, too many of us are okay, or at least not outraged enough, that the face of this appears to be Latino and South American and brown folks. And that is a travesty. It is a surrendering of the care and the love for our neighbor that we ought to have. But what's even more troubling, two things have happened in the last week. Donald Trump's administration has canceled the TPS for Haitians. 500,000 Haitians are no longer under temporary protective status, which means now that ICE raids can, with much more fervor and targeted attention, go after our Haitian loved ones who are all integrated into the larger Black community, which just means that now in our communities, we have individuals who are unaccountable to us from the federal government feeling now emboldened to go after Black bodies that they will say on its face are undocumented, are immigrants. Even worse than that, Donald Trump just yesterday said that perhaps their next project should go after individuals who may have been born here in this country who engage in crime and violence for too long without any interruption. We already know there's a deal with the president of El Salvador to send American citizens to jails and prisons in other countries. This all is happening right in front of our faces using immigrants, which are now being equalized to criminals, which we as Black people should know is another dastardly attempt to throw our lives away and make us expendable. People of faith, justice, and a conscience must stand up and fight for our neighbors, fight for our families, fight for the security of our communities, and do so without any equivocation.
That's the voice of Pastor Mike McBride, Black Church Plaque, livefree.org. As you were talking, Pastor Mike, a couple of things came to mind. One, the alligator, Alcatraz, as they're calling it, which is the largest detention facility in the country, built in the Everglades. So not only did it destroy that parts of that precious thing, but you have Governor Ron DeSantos bragging that it's inescapable. So let me break a little bit of this down. When people hear the word deportation, they're thinking that they catch Joe Blow and they go, "Where are you from, Joe Blow?" And he goes, "I'm from country X, Y, and Z." And they put him on a plane and send him there. And what is happening from everybody that we talk to, you go to jail first, you go to a detention center. They use the word detention, which makes it seem, which sanitizes that you're actually going to a prison.
That's right.
So this detention center that they have in Florida, right, is not for Floridians. This is for whoever they decide to pick up. So maybe they pick you up in Florida, maybe they pick you up in Texas, maybe they, you know, so this is a destination point that you're going to. So that's one. Two, it's a jail. You know, you're locked behind bars. You don't have control of your movements. You're separated from family. And you're basically bidding your time until the next steps, which are often unclear. Are you going to be on trial? Are you there for a period of time? Because they said that they want to put a certain amount of punishment on you. In the case of Haitians, you no longer being under protective status, which makes you a lawbreaker. You know, do you get to eat? Because in many of these places, the conditions are, you know, you're not eating, you're not getting health care, you're warehoused. And this is making a lot of money because these are privately owned detention centers, which if we go back to the work that you guys were doing with private prisons, we recall that when these contracts are signed, they were saying, look, you know, you're going to guarantee us a 90% occupancy. This comes back to the over-policing. Well, if nobody's committing crimes, then you go and find things that are wrong. So maybe you don't have violent crime anymore, so now you look for lesser crimes to fill these jails with. And if lesser crimes aren't happening, then you start to be like, well, Dave crossed, you know, a jaywalk. Let's do 3 days in the, you know, detention center. You start to look for these problems, and now there's an incentive to go out and hunt folks, which comes to the other part of this bill. You know, part of the money, from what I understand, is to reward people for the arrest they made. There's an economic incentive to go out and look for folks. So it may be me and you, if we're in a place like Brooklyn that's picked up, and we're not Haitian, but you know what? You figure that out after you go to the detention center and you pay money on a lawyer and you do whatever you need to do and they'll let you out. But in the meantime, we're counting that as an arrest and getting our, you know, $1,000 or two, whatever money they're giving as a bounty. That's where the danger is, as far as I'm concerned. Did I miss anything? Am I understanding?
No. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I would love to offer to your listeners, particularly we who live in quote unquote progressive cities and districts and states, this is all made possible by the anxiety and the fear mongering of the rise of crime, robberies, and shootings that are largely being pushed and manufactured to us as a talking point. Because what it is, put a seed in our mind. That Trump and his minions have now turned into a fully blossomed tree and forest is that the government has to go to extraordinary steps to quell the criminals that are running around the streets of our cities, immigrants who they are equating as criminals, Black people, poor people, often substance addicted individuals, all these criminals, all this squalor has to be dealt with an iron hand, rather than continuing to lean into the public health driven, public safety and community safety models that have been popularized and often evaluated with great success across the country. What we have to continue to do is hold on to our values. Again, I just want to say this to all of us who are in spaces where we are the vanguard and the tip of spear for the kind of reforms and innovations in community safety. We must be able to demonstrate in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles and in Chicago and New York that we can address the issues of social ills without having to resort to these authoritarian, totalitarian responses. And if we can't prove that as mayors and governors and city council members and county supervisors, then we allow the citizens of this country to be manipulated by the AI algorithms and social media companies who love to pump fear into our social media feeds and make us think that our city is on fire, when in actuality maybe a couple blocks that are historically disinvested from and in need of much more resources and healing. This is a moment for all of us to look ourselves in the mirror and ask ourselves, are we willing to allow this to happen on our watch? Civil violations should not be an excuse. And that's what it is to be in this country undocumented. It is not a criminal violation. It is a civil violation, which means that you either pay a fine or you show up to court and get a process through due process to figure out your next steps. Jumping to putting people in private detention centers owned by for-profit private prisons, putting them on planes to countries that they've never been to or may have fled from for obvious and unobvious reasons is a wicked response to a humanitarian crisis. We must hold our values. We must believe in the humanity of every individual and not allow this administration or our own internal fears to rob us of the shared dignity that is required for a peaceable city, state, and nation.
And for people who are unfamiliar, Pastor Mike was alluding to the vast network of websites, many of them well-funded,
yes,
that have popped up all around the country that just exclusively report on crime. And yep, they show images of Black folks smashing and grabbing. They get these videos from police and surrogates to the police, and they become... Well, we found that, you know, that you had mayoral candidates that were funding that, you know,
that's Laura, right,
Taylor, you
that's
one,
right,
of them.
That's right.
And others.
That, and we have, and we must never let them off the hook for this point, David, because it is so cynical. It is so wicked, and it betrays the human commitment to decency and honesty. Any individual who will stoop to these kinds of false tactics to try and scare people into giving them power are not to be trusted ever with power, ever, right, with power.
And so, you know, when you've had convenings that have come and we were able to compare notes with people from different cities, we found that every city had these sites.
Absolutely.
And they all followed the same type of formula.
And share other people's post and just slap a different city on it.
Right. So here it would be websites like Bay Area State of Mind, mm-hmm, Oakland State of Mind, which, you know, were well funded, and they were part of what we now know as dune looping.
Yeah.
And so so that became a weapon, and that helped lay the groundwork for the type of policies that are now being put into place. I bring this up because I'm not sure if it's Alejandro Mayorkas or if it's Todd Lyons, you know, the head of ICE. Mayorkas, I believe, is, is one of the secretaries of Homeland Security.
I think it's Homan now. Tom Homan took that over.
Thank you, Tom Homan.
Who just, again, to show how wicked these individuals are, someone asked him in a press conference the other day that he heard a migrant, undocumented human being died in the custody of either ICE agents or a facility. And he cavalierly said, people die in custody, police custody, and detention centers all the time.
Yes.
It was no remorse. It was no acknowledgement that perhaps something needs to be looked at or evaluated. Imagine if this is your family member, your neighbor. These are the people whose lives we are allowing to be placed in their hands.
And the person who died was a 75-year-old man. Right. Mm. Tom Holman, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Also said that he intends to, for the safety, again, coming back to these well-funded websites that have been doom-looping cities, when you look at the pattern, they have really been prominent in cities that are quote-unquote sanctuary cities. So he's using that to say, well, we need to go to New York and Chicago, Oakland, San Francisco, Bay Area, Los Angeles, sanctuary cities. So the bulk of these ICE raids with this increased policing will come to these cities. And he's saying that because of the organizing that's been done, well, then we're going to have to go even harder, which, you know, is a catch-22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Because in places where you don't have sanctuary cities, they have contracted and deputized police to act as ICE agents. So in places where you're able to have community control and say to the police, you're not going to do that, that's not the case in other cities. They just tell the police, we got a contract, so you be the ICE agent. So the amount of intensity that is experienced in some parts of the country, they want to replicate that in these big cities, except they just won't use our police, they'll have a federal police. In other words, there's no escaping the over-policing that they're talking about. And so, you know, he pretty much plainly said in his press conference, I'm coming after all these cities.
Yeah.
With that being said, what do you think we should be doing? I mean, you know, is there a role that local government should play? Is there a role that the average person should play, understanding that now they will, you know, they tend to ramp this up, especially if this bill passes?
So absolutely there's a role to play. We must resist this, right? I'm proud that Mayor Barbara Lee and other, you know, city and county elected officials have said that they will not cooperate with ICE when they show up to our communities. That kind of public statement, that kind of ordinance written into the city council's processes are important to hold fast, that we will not willingly comply. But we also have to take it a step further. We have to make sure that that statement translates with the police department, that even if they don't comply with the actual detaining of our community members, that they ought not to also share in intelligence. They ought to be much more transparent with our elected officials, from the mayor to all other appropriate local elected officials, of their information sharing.
Is there a penalty if they do? Because you have two
you lose your job.
Well, we have two different operations going back to some of these sites. I think we talked about that it was a local KTVU broadcast that bypassed the mayor, bypassed the chief of police, and went to the police union and brought Sam Singer, you know, who is notorious for doom looping, and had him talk about policies around sideshows, and he basically gave the police union talking point. So that kind of says to me, if you as an outlet are going to go to the police unions, and we've seen some of the things that they have been doing, San Jose is an example of that. What happens when they decide, well, you know, as union members, we're going to work with ICE, we'll give the intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, and they act as a body, even though that they may have, you know, superiors of police chief or mayor saying, you don't. How do you monitor that and make sure that they stay in line? It's not like law enforcement folks don't know each other. It's not like they're not sitting at a bar and going, hey, man, I can't tell you on the record, Officer Mike, but, you know, Dave's around the corner, but you didn't get that from me. How do you kind of stop that?
I mean, I don't know if there's a way to stop it at that granular level. Walter Riley would be a great, you know, legal mind to bring on to talk about that. We have been talking through our public safety transition team meetings with the new mayor and her whole team around how do we ensure that there are systems and structures in place that hold folks accountable to the values and the decisions of the executive leaders of our cities. And it, we have to be clear, the police chief works, at least in the city of Oakland and in most of our cities, for the mayor or the city manager. They are not an authority unto themselves, even though they are given great deference, which is why police accountability and the work we all do to reform policing is so important, to transform policing is so important. We must hold them accountable to live out our values. They
What about the police unions?
I'm getting to that, right? And so I think if we hold the police departments accountable, right, then it should also translate to their officers, and by extension, the unions then must be roundly criticized and called to account for engaging in any activity that is against the will of the people. Now, unions obviously have their own kind of, you know, sense of self-determination. They don't always work in the best interest. Many people feel of a general public's kind of sensibility. So I think the most we can do is to call them out, is to ensure that they are publicly corrected when they spread nefarious information, and make sure that when the next contract comes up, for their benefits and their salaries and their working conditions are negotiated with the city and with the public, that this kind of behavior is factored into, can we actually negotiate in good faith with individuals who are constantly subverting the will of the people. The unions have to bow, I would say, to the will of the people, or be made to do so, not in a violent way, but in a way that is about accountability. To me, that is the most nonviolent way to do so. And obviously, I hope that we continue to put pressure on the unions and the media, for that matter, to not give a platform to people who spread misinformation, disinformation, or thwart the will of the people.
That is Pastor Mike, our guest, talking about the police unions and the connection to this big bill. As we close out, I want to first have you tell people what the call to action is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is, I started off the show by talking about Bread and Circus and looking at the headlines and the chatter around the Diddy conversation. Leading into that was looking at all these Democratic leaders and not, you know, or just leaders in general, who have been rallying around Eric Adams in New York, a long line of people, you know, that have dedicated themselves to bashing Zohran Mamdani for his win in New York and the possibility of him becoming a mayor. To see the Al Sharptons of the world and others holding press conferences that are bashing the Democratic nominee for mayor, and then redirecting folks who to a person who has been under investigation and cutting deals with Donald Trump is crazy to me, because at this 11th hour, when people should be calling every congressperson possible to stop this beautiful, this big bill, right? I'm seeing folks demonize somebody who won an election fair and square.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, with the press conference calling people to action to stop this bill, what deal is being cut? Are the Democrats or this leadership, are they fighting and doing the work that you're doing? I'm seeing you guys out there organizing and press releases and getting people, you know, to do what needs to be done. And I'm sitting there going, you're holding a press conference about a Muslim who may become the mayor of New York who won?
Mm-hmm.
This is your thing? I'm seeing a long line, and I'm seeing a press conference demonizing him versus telling people there's a damn bill in Congress. Have we lost our way even on that level?
Well, I'll say this. You know, I'm gonna give some credit, and then I'm gonna give some criticism. We have been working in deep relationship with the Congressional Black Caucus. Brother Vince Evans, who is the executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus, the State of the People, a movement that has been galvanized by folks like certainly myself, Angela Rye, Joy Reid, all kind of folks, and Leah Daughtry, some folks who are, you know, very big staples inside both Democratic politics and outside. So there has been some really powerful cohesion happening at the local, state, and federal level around not only responding to this crisis, but all the crises of this administration. But it is an important critique for those establishment Democratic, both operatives, politicians, et cetera, funders, to realize that you can't have it both ways and you have to have some integrity. You can't criticize Bernie Sanders, who is not a Democrat, as they say, and tell him that only Democrats can run in our primaries and be duly elected as the standard bearer of the party. And then you have a Democrat who runs in New York among 20 candidates and ends up with a 12-point victory after all the ballots are cast through ranked choice, and then try to argue that you're going to run independent candidates to subvert the Democratic nominee. Either we're going to have integrity and make this an open process, which people were complaining about with Kamala Harris and with Bernie Sanders and on, or we're going to be duplicitous. And so I would just say that all of us have to continue to ask ourselves, do we really believe in democracy? Do we believe in democracy? Or are we trying to recreate a lighter form of fascism and political control by the wealthy elites who just may believe in a few more progressive causes than the right wing? I want to tell you that as a Black person who's had 4 or 5 generations of Black people in this country, we have always been fighting for a more inclusive democracy. We've not gotten close, but we're closer than we were. Anyone who would try to take us back away from that, because now the folks who want to be included in this democracy are Muslim, are queer, are Asian, are Latino, and they're not white, right-wing Christian men, then God help you, because we're going to be fighting you tooth and nail. God bless the good brother Zohran Mamdani. We are looking forward to his leadership in New York. And I want to call out to every so-called progressive politician, you ought to look at what this brother's doing, because there's a coalition that he's building that we can build all across this country of people who are tired of the status quo. Let's take a leap forward, not a step backward.
After Mike, marching orders for everybody that's listening to stop this bill.
Marching orders. Yes. You got 24 hours, maybe less than that, to call your elected official. I don't care where you live. You may assume that your elected official is going to vote no on this bill. You should call him anyway. You should send him an email. You should text 10 of your friends with the number. To call their elected official. That number is 202-224-3121. That is a congressional switchboard, 202-224-3121. You ought to text 10 of your friends that you know live in another state. Tell them to call the switchboard today. We know that about 4 or 5 Republican lawmakers who are planning to vote yes on this bill could be moved if they heard from folks to tell them that this bill is a non-starter. It is said this is the most unpopular piece of legislation that has ever been polled. So there are some folks in some swing districts that if they heard from you, they could be swayed. If I can say this real quick, David D., there were 52 Republicans, 53 Republicans, three senators, Republican senators voted no. That was not expected, and almost had the senator from Alaska to vote no, which would have killed the bill. If we can get 3 and almost 4 Senate Republicans out of 53, we should be able to find 4 or 5 out of 220 across the country. But it requires us to take some time today and fight and resist. Get on your phone. Send an email message through your email. You can go to bit.ly/stopTheBBL is our tool, but you can find a whole host of them on social media. And let's lean in. it will only take you 15 minutes to do that today, that 15 minutes could save a lot of people's lives and a lot of less stress for so many of us who are living literally at the intersection of survival in this country and in this time. So call your legislator, email your legislator, text 10 friends with the numbers to do the same. And then let's look up tomorrow, see what the results are, and recommit ourselves. As Angela Davis says, freedom is a constant struggle, struggling for freedom until freedom is won.
Pastor Mike McBride, Black Church PAC and livefree.org. We appreciate you taking time out. We'll have to have you back on. We appreciate the organizing that you all have done and the victories that you've had, especially in terms of getting some provisions removed from this bill. But it is far short of what we need.
Yes.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
You're tuned in to Hard Knock Radio. Let's get ready to hear a commentary from Melinda from Brown Girl Pride.
What if I told you there was a deeper hidden agenda when it comes to demonizing the southern border? And what if I told you that this deeper agenda actually prevents the eagle and condor prophecy from coming true? Hear me out. See, the southern border of the United States has always been a site for tension and conflict. Politicians and media outlets always focus the attention on immigration and safety, national security. And it's to paint a picture that the region is dangerous and needs to be controlled. And because of this constant demonization and destabilization of the regions from the Southwest United States to the top of South America, it's preventing the unification of the North and the South. And this is because it allows them to maintain control over land, resources, and indigenous identity. And this is not to take away from any other indigenous cultures within the Western Hemisphere, but the region from the Southwest United States to the top of South America, which is all of Mexico and Central America, holds historical and cultural and scientific significance. We see this persistent demonization through the consistent destabilization of these regions. Look at what they've done to Venezuela and El Salvador and Ecuador. What they're doing to Mexico and what they've always done to Mexico. And just because the Southwest United States is on the northern side of the border doesn't mean it's not part of the consistent targeting and demonization of this region. Not only that, these particular regions are very rich in resources, extremely rich in resources. So you have to keep these regions destabilized in order to take the land and resources from indigenous peoples. This also leads to cultural erasure. Not to mention, a huge scar in our lands was created when they cut through our lands to create the Panama Canal, effectively splitting up our one landmass into two. Not only that, but the regions from the Southwest United States to the top of South America has the highest concentration of indigenous people. That's including tribal and detribalized people. Some of the largest tribes in the United States are found at the southern border. Look at what they're doing to the Dene people, not honoring their treaties for water, illegally going onto their lands with uranium. I really want people to understand this picture because it's usually just seen as the eagle and the condor, and the Quetzal bird is never added to this narrative, to this prophecy. And the Quetzal bird is crucial to the prophecy. By having the Quetzal bird represent the Southwest United States to the top of South America, it has a symbolic meaning on how important this region is to unifying. And the Quetzal bird is an extremely important bird within this region's cultures. We also know that the Quetzal bird is associated to the quote-unquote Mesoamerican deity, Quetzalcoatl. We remove the Eurocentric ideology of a god or a deity and look at what Quetzalcoatl symbolized. The serpent represents shedding of the skin and advancing and evolving through time. The feathers represent the Quetzal bird, which had spiritual significance, meaning it served as a messenger and can see between the natural world and the spirit world, and also that it had extremely keen vision, representing having a keen vision and a clear eyesight as you grow, develop, advance, adapt. So the constant demonization, the forced assimilation to disrupt cultures, and the continued destabilization of these regions for its resources has prevented indigenous people within this central area to heal. And this area needs to heal in order for the North and the South to unite. Just like the Quetzal bird's vision is impaired when its feathers are removed or damaged, indigenous people from these regions have been prevented from exercising their full potential and achieving the goals we set out to achieve before colonization. Remember, we were extremely advanced civilizations at that time. Empires built on egalitarianism, and that's always a direct threat to supremacy. And so by keeping the bridge, the middle, the Quetzal, injured, sick, and in constant survival mode, we cannot heal enough to bridge the gap between the eagle and the condor, which is why it's so important for indigenous people across the Western Hemisphere to recognize the erasure that is occurring and to help educate our detribalized people. Because if they're not healed, the region can't heal. And if the region can't heal, the North and the South can't unite.
It is Hard Knock Radio. You just heard a commentary from Melinda of Brown Girl Pride.
It don't matter the year, 'cause it's just another number. As long as we all get down to the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, 'cause I know you got soul.
Get down.
It moves through your spirit, taking full control. While the voices are rising and the truth is flowing, revolution beats loud and the fire keeps growing. We demand what is ours, the right to be heard. Freedom of speech is the power of our word. Fight the power, rise and resist. Fight the power, we can't dismiss. Fight the power, our voices ignite. Fight the power, we're claiming our rights. It's freedom or death, no compromise. We fight for justice under open skies. Awareness, no, we can't get careless. To fight oppression, we must stay fearless. What we need is knowledge, we must stay relentless. Gotta stay on point and move with clear intention.
Fight the power, rise and resist. Fight the power, we can't dismiss. Fight the power, our voices ignite. Fight the power, we're claiming our rights.
And plus I'm amped. Most of my heroes never appeared on no stamps. cause I'm black and I'm proud, and not afraid to say it out loud. Fox News was a hero to most, Elon was a hero to most.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan, Cam, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation, simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Needin' Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me? Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on.
Check out.
Why every obvious think they hard not when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready from the steel gray beef. Say, please. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say, some peace to their lovers, I name with a please. Hey, some shade on.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
this is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to Non-Commercial Community Radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements.